Holy fuck, it's Friday!
It's all about the pantyhose, baby.
Oh, hello everybody. Welcome to episode 12 of the Tech Podcast. Nobody asked for, but everybody loves. It's called Two and a Half Bens. I'm Phone Boy.
I'm Phoenix.
I'm Sir Pimrose.
Yeah, well, we had a holiday.
That happened.
Yeah, that happened. Let's not have it happen again.
Today was in the business of delivering Christmas gifts, probably the busiest day ever.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised about that. I mean, hell, I got stuff. We got stuff today. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we actually. Well, I don't know. It seems like there's a I don't know. Last Sunday, like you, because here most of our stuff gets delivered through USPS because we live out in the middle of nowhere. And so, on Sunday they backed up the Brinks truck to our patio and had a bunch of stuff. We've ordered a few things for, you know, projects and that kind of thing. And it's just, you know, yes, it seems like there's a continual stream of Amazon stuff. Although today was not nearly. I'd only had like three boxes outside and. Instead of like, what do we have? Like 12 on Sunday, honey, something like that.
We had a delivery today of cat litter that the delivery person very conveniently put right up against the screen door that swings outward.
Jeez. You gotta love it. Yeah. You know, one problem we have here, because it's because of where we live, there's not much of an overhang, and it does rain here a bit. And so, yeah, well, I actually had a Costco delivery. Yeah, that got screwed up. I order stuff from Costco.com more than I go to an actual Costco, because the actual Costco is like in Knoxville or something, but we've gone to twice in the last 2 days, and that's part of the reason why we're just like, yeah, no. But when
we moved into this house, there was absolutely literally nowhere outside that didn't get rained on. The only place that, like, the door was the door jamb, and that was, you know, as much overhang as it had.
Yeah.
About 10, 12 years back, we went ahead and, you know, replaced the deck because bits of it were starting to rot and become an actual safety hazard.
Yep.
And I insisted that the deck be made with a waterproof coating on it. So now we have like a 12 by 20 roof that covers the downstairs area. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't wait until we have our own place, but that's, another time, I guess. But yeah, this is a whole
nother. Okay.
Yeah.
But this is a tech show.
This is a tech show, but okay. So actually the question is how many of your stories have AI involved this week? How many stories you got first?
About 0.7.
You have 0.7 stories?
Which is to say that the last story that I picked out and decided I was going to do, I didn't quite have enough time because, of course, you know, I'm the master of procrastination and always doing things at the last moment. I didn't write up notes. I just have a story in front of me, which is fine.
Well, yeah, because we can talk about it. Okay, yes. So you have 0.7 stories. Okay, so now I have like four stories, but that's okay. Oh. It's because
of my stories, one of them is actually about OpenAI, but is not an AI story.
Yeah, I think I've got one story that of course that is relevant to AI, but not more the technology. It is an actual, something we mentioned, I mentioned it last week, I think on Lotus, but it's an AI story, but this thing that Google wants to tell employees, it must double capacity every 6 months to meet AI demand, right? And the idea being that they're ramping up their AI capability, and we talk, you know, that of course that means more compute and more data centers and all of that, right? And that's the, you know, while the AI bubble talk fills the air these days with fears of overinvestment that could pop at any time, and I've even got another article which I didn't pull the text for, but Google had said that, or you know, the Google's CEO had said that they warned of irrationality in the billion dollar AI investment boom, and they say if it pops, everybody's going to be affected by it. No shit. But
can I ask a favor for the next THB?
What's that?
Okay, I get that you're going to drink your coffee before this, but don't also drink Phoenix's coffee before the show.
No, I didn't drink Phoenix's coffee. Actually, I've only had two cups of coffee today. Okay. I didn't believe that. So
that's my way of pointing out that you're
slow the F down, as I think is
yeah,
what you're
maybe
saying.
A little bit.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. I think I might have Phoenix's energy tonight based on how she's looking over there, during the all hands call meeting earlier this month, Google's AI's infrastructure head Amin Yadat told employees that the company must double its serving capacity every 6 months to meet demand for artificial intelligence services, according to CNBC. And it shows a rare look at what Google executives are telling its own employees internally. This guy's a vice president at Google Cloud, and he presented slides to its employees showing the company needs to scale the next 1,000% in 4 to 5 years. Now, while a 1,000-fold increase in compute capacity sounds ambitious by itself, Yadat noticed some key constraints. Google needs to be able to deliver this increase in capacity, compute, and storage networking for essentially the same cost and increasingly the same power, the same energy level, he told employees during the meeting. It won't be easy, but through collaboration and co-design, we're going to get there. Well, let's see. What about that? Let's see. You got to have data centers, and we know what a disaster those are, and are getting pushed back on. And yeah,
I might want to very briefly interject. I didn't pull notes for this story because I didn't think I'd use it, but I read an article that was just kind of an analysis of if the AI bubble, they didn't use the word bubble, but continues on its current rate. Here's what it will do to the average person's power bill, your electricity bill. And spoiler alert, what it's talking about is on average, people's utility bill will have gone up between 20 and 45% per month just from AI. That doesn't count inflation or anything else.
Yeah, and why are we, if we're not using AI, right, why are we paying for it? You know, that's the things I never understood. But
because the power companies all have charging models where they will pay like per watt, but all of the infrastructure that they're being asked to shell out, all of the capital improvements and everything is split evenly amongst customers and not amongst kilowatts. And that was never a big deal when you know your biggest customers used maybe five times what your smallest customers do, but now it's more like 5,000 times.
Yeah, you would think that the people that they would actually be at some point the power company goes, yeah, you're generating that power on your own, right? Because at some
point, how about we're not plugging you into the grid or we're throttling you. If you need power beyond what a normal office building requires, maybe build your own damn power plant.
If you wanted to get internet service from somebody like a Comcast or somebody like that, right? And you don't live in one of the areas where they serve, or you live outside of the area. Guess what they do? They make you pay to run the fiber or whatever it is out to wherever it is, and sometimes that can cost thousands of dollars. Sometimes I think I've even pulled stories on Lotus or maybe I don't remember if I covered them or not, but you know, people just get into these crazy places like, okay, I have to spend in order to get, you know, something that isn't my phone hotspot or whatever, which may or may not work depending upon where they're at. You have to pay. Well, okay, so the individual has to pay, but these companies that are using way more, you know, of everything are somehow get it subsidized, or you know, they negotiate with the governments to get it through. And you know, the government should be saying, look, if you want that much power, yeah. And then, of course, and then we talk about water, right? Phoenix had a writer where she this week where she was talking to some guy that was involved in building some of the data centers, and I think his eyes went wide open when we told him how much water that some of these data centers need. Got his attention, I'll tell you that. And I think the people that are, you know, all in on this stuff may not understand all of the risks. It's kind of like the things that are quote unquote more environmentally friendly. Well, all they did is they moved the pollution somewhere else, right? So
there's plenty of evidence to back up. I don't remember exactly who first said it. It was someone famous whose name I never committed to memory, but it is said and generally supported by evidence that the prosperity of a society, of the people in the society, is directly proportional to the amount of energy that that society uses, no matter how the energy is, you know, apportioned. And this is, you know, this argument is generally whipped out whenever you see somebody talking about trying to go green and, if we just all shut, you know, reduce the amount of energy we have, well, then you're going to make things worse for everybody, period. You know, if you try to shut down power plants, saving energy actually harms, you know, data supports that it harms society. So that said, I'm not sure. I think it's being apportioned pretty well out of whack, but I am absolutely in favor in general of increasing the amount of energy used by a society, because ultimately, eventually, that energy gets used to raise standard of living for everybody, in theory. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen this time, but it has. In the past, whenever energy usage goes up, ultimately, it results in things getting better. So I'm cool with that. But holy crap, is this a bubble? And it's testing my condition.
And we've seen it before. We went through this before, and so obviously and you can just see the, you know, they're saying they need to scan compute power. Well, last I checked, Moore's law kind of hit the Moore's law hit the we hit the limit on that.
Moore's law crashed headlong into Heisenberg's uncertainty principle at some point. You can't keep making transistors smaller and expect them to be predictable.
Yeah, exactly.
But Moore's law has changed in the past, because remember, the original formulation was that clock speeds would double every 18 months, and that stopped happening around, 2004?
Yeah, because we haven't gotten much past, like, 3 gigahertz or whatever.
Clock speeds kind of flattened out somewhere between 3 and 4 gigahertz. They, you know, the properties of electricity made, you know, the capacitance of silicon pretty much said, nope, you're not going faster than this. So they came up with different ways, and, you know, these days they're putting more and more transistors on a die, and that's the one that we're going to run into soon. But, you know, the ability to push things farther parallel, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of people out there who think, of course, that the next major step will be, to jump over and turn everything into quantum computers.
We still don't have large scale application of that technology.
Well, widespread quantum computing is only 2 to 5 years away. It's only been 2 to 5 years away for decades.
For at least 2 to 5 years.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's just, so you just kind of look at all this and I can't, how is anybody not looking at this, and anybody that's rational look at this and go, yeah, this is just headed for a collision course, because at some point, if this is what it's going to be, right? If they think they got to double it, they're not going to be able to do it. I mean, you know, unless there's a major technological breakthrough or something. I mean, seriously, like and of course you'd also have to it'd have to be even more power efficient, right? You know, and maybe resource efficient, right? Maybe something that doesn't have, all of these processors produce a shit ton of heat, right? That's why they all have.
They do.
Yeah.
I guess where I was going with my extremely meandering argument about energy usage is that I am not particularly concerned in the long term about energy efficiency, because in so long as the free market has anything to say, and the marginal cost of energy continues to be non-zero, people will track toward better energy efficiency for purely economic reasons. I'm not worried about that. I am a little bit worried, especially in the short term, about resource allocation. The very idea that, you know, we've got these companies that have been allowed to get way, 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 way too big and way too influential. You know, every time a company goes over, you know, whatever market cap, we sit there and they look at them like, oh god, you know, they're too big to fail. No, they're not. We can let them fail, please.
Yeah, we can also do it with governments, maybe too. But anyway,
governments are
that's a different show.
Fail, but that, yeah. I guess. We need to, how to put this, incentives matter. make people pay for the resources they use and let economics work the rest of it out. You know, why is it alarming that, you know, a ridiculous amount of our water is being used by data centers? Well, mostly because the people all up and down the AI chain are not paying for all the costs associated with the resource usage.
Yeah, because the government is either paying for, you know, the government at some level. Government
subsidizes things. VCs subsidize things.
Yeah.
Utility companies subsidize the hell out of things by amortizing all capital costs across every user or customer. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, these companies are trading on valuations that are probably unrealistic anyway.
All the VC money is just going around in a circle. This person pays this person who pays this person who pays back to the original.
I think they played it on No Agenda at some point, but this is the country has this much debt, they owe it to this country. Okay, who does this country owe debt to? And it's just kind of this big circle jerk of we all owe each other, everybody money. And I kind of looked at, remember when they played that years ago, and I went, the economy's probably going to blow up like everywhere at some point because everybody's claiming they got all this money, and it's
just, think the stability of the economic system pretty much relies on people not realizing or not knowing.
Yes, it's the Federal Reserve effect we have that going on. I mean, seriously, the Federal Reserve is its own thing. It's not federal, nor is it a reserve. It prints money. So,
I would like at least some input from Phoenix on this one, if we have it. Is she still awake?
I'm here. And no, okay. I have absolutely no input because, at least two of the stories I've brought are probably going to cover some of the stuff y'all are fapping about right now.
All right.
I think it's your turn to do one, I guess.
How did it become my turn?
I don't know.
I was suggesting, you want me to go?
I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, I can talk about how the 10 trillion AI bubble pops because we know it's coming.
Yeah, I mean, it's related, yeah.
Well, it does. I mean, the AI surge doesn't resemble a repeat of the dot-com downfall. It represents an entirely new kind of financial cycle. And, you know, in 2000, you know, Cisco and now NVIDIA, the current AI leader, you know, they're all analyzing, like, what's going on. So in 2000, you know, we experienced a valuation bubble. Why did that just go off? My do not fucking bother me is on. I must have had the screen open. So anyways, we experienced a valuation bubble in 2000 where stock prices were disconnected from reality. And in 25, we're kind of seeing it again. We're facing a capacity bubble where the infrastructure expenditures are unrelated to the current utility.
We're running into constraints on the ability to even sort of meet the demand.
Well, you're not wrong on that. And of course, we talked on the other show that we do, Lotus Effect, you know, Saturdays, 5 Eastern, on about the fact that, you know, for one of these data centers in Texas, 10 million gallons a day. This is unheard of. This is not, there's no way this is going to be able to say.
That doesn't sound sustainable.
That's the word I was looking for, was it's not sustainable. It's absolutely not, especially when the demand is outpacing growth.
It would be in November in the Pacific Northwest. I think that's about how much water is hitting my roof right now.
That's a good point.
Well, exactly. I was going to say, the question is how heavy is it raining? Because usually the rain there is light. I mean, you know, it is.
We're going in and out of the raining sideways phase. It's typical November weather.
Okay, yeah, I got you. Yeah, that's usually because October you still get some nice days, and then it just kind of cools off, and then November, yeah, you're just basically in wet. You know, maybe it'll dry out for 30 seconds, you know, et cetera. Yeah. So and it's all hiding on your roof.
Okay. Anyway.
Well, the basic TLDR on this is that, you know, back in 97 to 2000, Cisco had a 55% revenue increase, where NVIDIA's already seen a 70% in the same amount of time. You know, as far as cash flow goes, you know, Cisco saw about $1.3 billion per quarter, and NVIDIA is seeing like $25 billion in the same amount of time, you know, per quarter. And the customers for Cisco, you know, the fragile dot-com startups versus the cash-rich big tech is what we're looking at when we're comparing the Cisco dot-com bubble to the potential AI bubble bursting. You know, Cisco was a bubble because its stock prices were inflated. And even though NVIDIA may be a bubble, it's because the demand is probably going to be fleeting.
Well, not only that, I mean, fleeting, yeah, because at some point people are just going to say no to all of this. And it's like, yeah, and they're, I don't know how much of the demand, you know, is actually like real demand versus these companies saying, oh, everybody's going to use AI. And so we're going to build all this capacity. But what if people say no to it?
And that's the thing, is that Microsoft, Google, and Meta are spending well beyond $200 billion a year on data centers and chips. So this is all money that's fixing to end up in a landfill and to absolute pull the plug on so many companies. Because when this thing bursts, you're going to hear the audible suck as all of these companies are heading down the drain.
And if I may make a prediction, when it bursts, it is going to go fast. Like it, within a couple weeks, you're going to go from, you know, building city-sized data centers a week to suddenly nobody is using it.
Yeah, meanwhile,
you're going to have a lot of useless monoliths.
Yeah, useless monoliths.
And by the way, the moment of the bubble bursting, I can even predict, although I don't know, you know, the timing of it per se, but is going to be the first moment that one of these big models looks at their price, their balance sheet, and starts actually charging people what it costs. And the moment that that happens, the moment that it is not being subsidized all the way to the end user, you're going to see, you know, people look at this and go, yeah, I don't need this for that cost. Demand is going to hit the floor. And within 2 weeks, everybody's going to back out and go, you know, because right now everyone is holding their breath, even the people in the industry, except for the C-suite people who are still, you know, totally high on their own farts, that most of the people in the industry are sitting here holding their breath going, I know it's going to end, but we got to keep squeezing every bit of the gravy train out until the train stops completely. They're all waiting. They're all ready. The smart ones are making plans already to yank as many of their assets out as they can the moment that they see the crash is starting.
Who says it they are? The smart people haven't already done that.
Well, some of them probably have, but I mean, the rent taking is still going on right now.
Well, in such a way, because ultimately, the way the two bubbles compare, 2000 was a bubble of junk. You know, aside from major network and software infrastructure firms that a couple of them are still around today, the investors were financing shares in fictitious companies lacking viable business models. And
yeah, that, you mean like AI companies?
Yes. I mean, see, but the thing is this, with AI, it's a bubble of anticipation. The investors believe they're backing the most significant infrastructure initiatives in human history, but it all comes before it's been fully validated, you know, utility-wise and economically. It's basically a pipe dream that somebody, you know, we talk about sharing a fever dream with what we do in the Studio 33 and Rideshare Radio Spectre. This is kind of like that, except for nobody's pinching us to wake us up. This is the sad reality of what we're living in, is everything is smeared with AI. It's infecting everything. And when it finally goes tits up, not if, when, that's, you know, what you guys are talking about. It's just going to completely vaporize. And there's going to be a lot of companies that are really spinning around like dogs chasing their tails, trying to figure out where their asses went.
It will be entertaining.
Well,
it might even prompt a new ATN.
Oh my.
If the AI bubble bursting prompts a new ATN, let me get working on my hacker skills to take this shit out.
Yeah, exactly.
Mama's bathroom needs cleaning and I need to take a shower.
Jesus Christ. Oh my goodness. Yeah, that is. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't understand why everybody hasn't been seeing this, because it's just kind of obvious. You just start thinking about all this stuff with any.
Because they're blinded by it. It's like the new shiny toy.
It's called hype.
Oh, yes. Which, of course, again, we've seen this cycle before. But
yeah, the propaganda. We live in a golden age of propaganda where somebody with money and a mouthpiece can make huge amounts of people believe whatever the hell they want. We're seeing this with AI. We saw it a few years ago with people who decided that the common cold needed more hype. Every couple of years, something comes out that, it used to be when they were practicing, it was some consumer thing, Beanie Babies or Bitcoin or Tamagotchis or whatever. Now it's things that are genuinely going to make people jump out of skyscrapers when the hype finally settles down.
Well, yeah, it's the Gartner hype cycle, right? We're hitting the peak of unrealistic expectations, and yeah, we're gonna hit the trough of disillusionment here pretty quick, and it's gonna be hard, and I don't know if
I'm gonna laugh.
Yeah, we'll get a laugh. As I said, I think it's gonna be more than the AI bubble that bursts at that point, because yeah, like I said, the larger economies of the world are all kind of all owe each other money. Well, at some point, all that money, it's like you can't even repay. Yeah, there's not enough money to pay back the debt without like printing a whole lot more. Oh, wait a minute, that's what they've been doing for all this time.
Yeah, that's what they do.
I was gonna say, where have you been? You're older than I am.
Yeah. Exactly.
Although Cotton Gin in the chat brought up a good point. He said, kind of neat that Bill Gates was in on the COVID scam too.
Coincidence? I think not.
Well, yes.
Speaking of propagandists.
Yeah, exactly.
People with lots of money and a mouthpiece. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and of course, I make the comment about I've made this comment multiple times about Microsoft's security record. It's like, we all use this stuff, and yet it's probably one of the most insecure pieces of software known to man, followed by Cisco stuff, right? I cannot think that is not a coincidence. speaking of coincidence.
I could tell you stories. In fact, I have.
Yes, you have. No, but I see this, and I see this, the part of the business I've been in, and you just kind of wonder, why do all of these companies spend all of the, basically just over and over and over again have these like high profile CVEs? Wouldn't somebody with a security product, wouldn't you want to be not part of the fucking problem?
You've already put your theory out, and I think we all agree. They're intentional. They're coded in.
You need the diehard clip. You're not part of the solution. You're part of the problem.
We actually have it. Yeah, we actually do.
And I didn't think I was gonna need it, but that's not a bad idea to have it on my board.
That's actually good to have on the board. Yeah, I'm starting to load things for this.
That is a quality clip for so many scenarios.
Yes. Yeah. Here we go. I'm gonna play it now.
Now you listen to me, Jerkoff. If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. Quit being part of the fucking problem.
Yeah, quit being part of the fucking problem. We're not being part of the fucking problem.
That's our message to all, like Sam Altman and all these cunts. Quit being part of the fucking problem.
They are pretty much.
Do you have more on this topic?
No, I think.
Nope.
I wanted to talk about internet infrastructure.
In particular.
Nobody thinks about the infrastructure because, of course, it's just, server on server on server, just kind of, chugging along, doing its thing, never goes out, always reliable, except when it's not. I'm kind of poking through the back of the chat. A few days ago, I actually posted a fantastic image of the internet infrastructure, but that's
it's the XKCD comic, most likely.
It is the XKCD comic with some extra bits and new labels.
Yes, of course.
One of the things on it was do I have it? No, I don't have it.
Yeah, we should. Yeah, this makes for great. This makes for great radio, by the way.
Yes, it does. I'll drop it in, but it had things like. One of the things is labeled one of the really narrow structures is labeled unthanked open source developers, and another one of the things holding everything up says AWS and Cloudflare. And then the other thing is there's a giant wedge stuck halfway through that's very slowly cranking and toppling the whole thing. It says AI. Yeah, it's quality. However, it's that AWS and Cloudflare thing I'm talking about.
Yes, in particular, of course.
A couple days ago, Cloudflare was out for 6 hours and a third of the internet went dark.
Yeah. It's amazing. When you put all your eggs in the same basket everybody else puts their eggs in, things go down, so do you. Yeah,
in this particular case, quote from the article, actually quote from the press release from Cloudflare, the issue was not caused directly or indirectly by a cyber attack or malicious activity of any kind, unless you count putting all of your infrastructure in Cloudflare as malicious, which I kind of do, but anyway. Instead, it was triggered by a change to one of our database system's permissions, which caused the database to output multiple entries into a feature file used by our bot management system. The result was, quote, a routine database permissions update caused Cloudflare's bot management system to generate an oversized configuration file containing duplicate entries. The file, which exceeded the built-in size limits, caused the software to crash while routing traffic across Cloudflare's network. A config change. Somebody committed to production, and it took out Twitter. It took out ChatGPT. It took out a bunch of other huge sites. Really, the tragedy in this story is that they came back up.
Yeah.
Another quote, every 5 minutes, a query generated either correct or faulty configuration files, depending on which cluster nodes had been updated, causing the network to fluctuate between working and failing states. Just had to love that one.
Yeah. Is that, it sounds like DNS, you know?
It does. This one wasn't DNS, though.
I know. It's a config change. They must have something, you know.
No, like, we had a different one that in a completely different provider. A different third of the internet went out back in October for AWS, which was DNS.
Yes. Well, also, didn't we have a similar one with Azure, too?
Yes.
Yeah, that was about 3 months ago. Yep. The AWS outage, I don't know if you covered it on the other one, but I never brought it to this show.
Yeah, I think we did in Lotus Tech.
I wouldn't be surprised, but I'll hit the highlights. Thousands of sites went down on that one at the very end of October.
Yes, and including a site that the Phoenix uses. It was something related.
Wasn't
to
that my Pearson? That
oh
went
yeah,
out?
Yeah,
that
was Pearson. Oh yes, I do remember that. That one was caused by DNS quote endpoint resolution failures for DynamoDB. These are related, by the way. I'm going to go back to the Cloudflare one. The component that went out was called bot management. And I have to rant very briefly about what the hell this is. This is a system that interferes with your ability to use any part of the internet by telling you to turn on JavaScript so that it can question your humanity.
Wait. You're not going to do it.
How about you run JavaScript in my left nut?
Exactly.
Yeah, Spencer has it right.
Spencer nailed it with that one. Bot management, just very briefly, bot management is the part of Cloudflare that tries to determine the difference between humans, good bots, and bad bots. And first of all, none of those categories are particularly well-defined. The question of what's a human when all of your proxy is via a network is laughable on its face. And the fact that everybody thinks that you can do it is the only reason why people aren't just chuckling at the very idea of trying to find an automated robot way of determining which robots have a human behind them somewhere. The only reason that they, you know, Cloudflare can even claim it works at all is that they use the kind of heuristics that you get from routing a third of the internet through your gateways, which is some pretty powerful data. Okay,
if I may, wasn't Cloudflare the same clowns that brought down literally like every airline except for Southwest?
That was CrowdStrike.
CrowdStrike, yes. Sorry.
Yeah. So yeah,
a different one third of the internet.
Yeah.
Got it.
So Cloudflare is a what they
I got confused for a minute.
Yeah. Cloudflare is kind of a content delivery network.
It's I know what it is, and I don't know why. Like, I knew it was CrowdStrike. I don't know how.
Cloudflare's business model is literally to sit in between every server on the web and every client on the web.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what they...
Doesn't that sound like a fucking firewall slash gateway in a way?
They actually do certain security functions as a result. They do security. They do fantastic gatekeeping. They are unholy powerful. With if Cloudflare ever decided to get into the censorship game, they could shut off entire demographics from whatever the hell they wanted to, because they own that much of it. And when I say decided to get in, you know, or coerced by a sufficiently annoyed government.
Yeah,
this kind of the pitfalls we talk about with a certain entity becoming too large or having too much?
Yeah.
That's why monopolies are, you know, same illegal thing. And shit.
Cloudflare is the kind of thing that should never have been allowed to get this big, because can you say single point of failure? For the whole freaking web.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, okay, phoneboy.com, I still have that behind Cloudflare. I'm not sure why I originally did it to begin with, but I could replace it, but it's basically...
So that your site can go down too when Cloudflare
I haven't posted anything. That site hasn't been up in 2 years.
Yeah, I haven't posted anything to the site in a couple of years, so that's a whole different discussion. But yeah, I need to get my... Anyway, that's a whole different problem that would actually be relevant on this show, because it involves doing things like Jekyll. But again, we're talking about Node Package Manager. No, I don't want to... Anyway, that's a whole other fucking... Yeah.
But hold on. If I may, a half a Ben. I'm pretty damn sure that one of the things you learn just basic in the computer stuff is before you deploy anything, you sandbox and test it so you don't break shit.
That's what we used to do back in the day. No, they deploy to... No, fuck it.
Straight to protection or production.
Yeah, well, somewhere along the line, somebody realized, hey, you know what? We can put out a software update every single day, which means that we can deploy everything straight to production, because the worst that happens is we break everything for one day and then we put out another patch the next day and it's all good. What could go wrong?
Everything.
That was around the time that I left Microsoft, because they were firing all of their testers. They're like, oh, we don't need to test in-house anymore. Fuck it. Our users are our testers.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and they my day job does things called early availability programs. I'm sure Microsoft has preview programs.
Microsoft does that too, but they call it Windows Update.
Exactly. Well, they have something that's even worse than Windows Update. It's called the preview program, you know, which really pushes the beta stuff. And then
I was literally going to say, don't you want to be a beta tester too?
So I've done that. I used to run the beta versions of iOS on my phone, you know, just because I could. And sometimes the features were useful, but I've kind of gotten to the point now, you know what? No. I mean, I upgrade it just because, you know, because everything is web-based, and we know that we know exactly how secure web technology is. There's a reason Ryan Bemrose runs with JavaScript off on his browser. Why do I need browsers? Oh, actually, this is a funny one. So for some of the meal prep we were doing, we were trying to print recipes for...
It was the challah bread.
The challah bread
kept crashing because we have ad blockers.
Yes, it's going no. Yeah, because I do run. I do run with an ad blocker. I don't turn off JavaScript. But
yes,
it does.
You want sanity? You want to keep your brain intact? You run with a damn ad blocker.
Yes, of course. And it's still,
and it makes us laugh every time it send it pops up like, oh, we noticed you're using an ad blocker. Click here to disable. I'm like, how about you click kiss my ass?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah,
I get that, because all of that stuff that detects ad blockers does it with JavaScript.
Yeah, and of course, and so if you turn off JavaScript, it should.
They can't run the code that detects your ad blocker.
Yes, and it'll just say, oh, you can't load the page. Well, I guess,
By the way, that the trick to the Bemrose way is overcoming your FOMO. Click, oh, this page won't load without JavaScript. Oh, I guess they really didn't want me to see whatever the hell they have going on. Oh, well, I'll go on with my life.
Yeah.
There are very few people out there who have the ability to do that.
Yeah, and that's, and honestly, I think, yeah, there's a, yeah, we've been talking about this in various contexts a lot. It's, yeah, I mean, there's one thing about kind of keeping an eye on what's going on out in the world, but how much time are you spending doing that? And at the end of the day, put it down and live your, and be present in your own life, you know. But yeah, that's, we can pretty much every problem that people have with, that you can kind of figure out, it's like, we're talking about driving around Knoxville, and yeah, actually, I think there's probably the least traffic I've seen in Knoxville ever. Having gone there, of course, it was Black Friday and there was the interstate was actually pretty there wasn't any accidents. Yeah, there was plenty of stupid people, but everybody has to, you know, it's just everybody has to be stimulated all the time with and assaulted with information. Turn it off, folks. It's a good idea. There's a reason you have your phone locked in your drawer, you know.
Professor Ted was right.
Yes.
I mean, fix your information diet.
I love the fact that almost every time we do this or the other show, we have to mention the fact that Professor Ted was right.
Yes.
And we will continue to say.
Yeah. In fact, that might even make that a show title just for the sake of argument.
Good idea. Yeah.
So at the risk of trying to finish my presentation, I was going to go back to AWS because there's some amazing parallels. The AWS outage was caused, 1 month earlier than the Cloudflare outage. The AWS outage was caused by DNS. DNS was not the direct cause on the Cloudflare side, but I went ahead and dug. I'm like, how did DNS screw this up? Obviously, DNS is kind of a problem. DNS is the lookup system where anytime two computers want to talk to each other over the network, the obvious way using the IP protocol is they use the number a.b.c.d. Let's not even go into IPv6, please.
Yes, which is a fucking eye chart. Don't try to recite an IPv6 number.
But the four numbers is actually how the computers communicate. But those are, for various reasons, people don't like hard coding IP addresses, among other things. You know, it affects your configuration. It means you have to recompile your software if you ever have to try to change a computer node, et cetera, et cetera. So it becomes useful to give a name to an IP address. Enter DNS. Which is a centralized point of failure for the entire internet or your entire local domain or wherever the DNS server is, that every single computer that wants to send any packet or make any query or do anything across the network first goes to this single point of failure, single centralized server, and says, hey, I want to find phoneboy.com. What's its number? And then the DNS server. Fortunately, DNS is a very old protocol. It's well understood. It's really well tested. The implementations are. And it's a pretty simple protocol. So it doesn't screw up that badly. But it screws up enough.
Mostly it seems like it screws up because people are stupid and misconfigure it.
Yeah. Or because people try to use IPv6, but we weren't going there.
No, but yes, IPv6 creates its own problems.
But yeah, DNS is by itself a single point of failure for everything. Did you know that there is a server, technically a round robin bank of servers somewhere, and then different co-loped data set, but logically speaking, there is one single server in the world. The server's name is com.
Yeah,
every single internet site, everything you ever do that ends in .com goes first to that server.
Well, first it goes
to your local one and asks for caches. But let's assume cache misses wherever. Ultimately, it all gets data from that one server and says, hey, where is phoneboy.com? Where is serbemrose.com? Where is et cetera? Everything that ends in .com goes to that one computer. And then there's likewise ones for called net, called show, whatever. And there's a lot of virtualization and a lot of load balancing and stuff like that. But this is literally, they built a network around numbers, the internet, that based on the IP protocol, around numbers that was designed to, they say, if one entire node gets nuked off the planet, or more likely somebody trips over a power cord or misconfigures DNS, whatever, if it disappears, the idea is that the number routing system is designed to automatically go find another server. And they took that and went, yeah, but we don't like numbers because they're not human friendly. And they put a central network, centralized network that is entirely top down hierarchical on top of it and said, yeah, this will do because, you know, this these servers will never go down.
Yeah, right.
And they don't.
Well, they generally,
Unless something gets screwed up.
Yeah, okay. So then, but you forgot to mention the root name servers, right? So the note, because you're talking about .com, right? Which is a top level domain, right? Yeah. There are 13 root name servers, as I recall, and they're all over the place. So at some point, you might get a query that goes all the way to the root name server, right? So yeah, they might be able. Yeah, I'm surprised that data is not being sold and mined to somebody.
Well, up until a couple of years ago, it was all run by ICANN, which was under the United States Department of Commerce, who is not savvy enough to sell bits off of data off for profit. But I believe that got transferred to an international. I don't remember that it was a few years ago. I think that the Department of Commerce got rid of it and it got now is handled by some kind of international conglomerate who is probably only a matter of time before they start selling ads on it or something.
Yeah, well, yeah, let's hope not. But yeah, I mean, I've always conceded, so if you wanted to have your own top level domain, like if you wanted to have .lotus, right? Yeah, you got to pay a lot. You have to pay a lot of fucking money to do that. You know, I don't know. Yeah, but it is a central, you know, they could, you know, we talk about, you know, turning things off. What do they do when they seize domains? Well, you know, the government petitions goes to the registrar and says, yeah, redirect this domain, right?
They don't look for the physical servers to unplug because that would take a lot of effort to find. No, they just go to the centralized point and say, hey, you know, and point a metaphorical gun at the admins who have database write access and say, hey, you're going to go ahead and null route this domain name. And now all of the botnets that rely on names suddenly can't find their control software.
Yeah. Oh, I have an interesting bot story that I'll share later. Speaking of which,
let me finish up with one more thing. And this is Wednesday. This is 2 days ago. There was a lot of, it's called speculation, according to the AWS press release. On Wednesday, the online services for Fortnite, Ark Raiders, Roblox, and one other big online game that I can't, all went offline right around the same time. And suddenly, rumors and social media posts started spreading all over the place saying, oh no, AWS is out again because they all happen to use AWS. Enough that Amazon rushed in to say, no, no, it wasn't us.
That's funny.
And, among other things, the Amazon press release came out and said, the only place that you should ever go to find out if AWS is down is the AWS health dashboard. I mean, I get that that's probably going to be a lot more reliable than a Discord server somewhere where somebody says it's down, but at the same time.
Yeah, but those things aren't always accurate either from what we've.
Yeah, and they might not always want to tell you exactly what's going on for reasons.
Yeah, for reasons of national security.
Or reasons of we don't want to embarrass our company.
Yeah.
Or reasons of it might cost us, 0.01 in stock value if people find out that we went down for the second time in a month.
Oh, that doesn't seem to get anybody off of the damn shit, though.
No, it doesn't.
No, because much like a drug addiction, you can watch a ton of people around you die, but you still got to tap that vein.
And the last note that I had on the story, which I forgot to put in when I was talking about the DNS thing, from the AWS press release, the problem that they had last month was endpoint resolution failures caused by DNS in DynamoDB. Now, I'm not exactly certain what DynamoDB is. My understanding is that it's probably a some kind of AWS specific database service that they provide. Nobody in any press release or story or nobody ever seems to ask, why a database needs DNS to complete internal queries. I guess that ship sailed decades ago. The idea of I need to talk to another part of my own system. Why don't we go out to the global DNS?
Right.
Let's go ahead and inject points of failure into our app. I understand that I'm absolutely tilting at windmills when I say, hey, maybe some services shouldn't be networked. I mean, that ship definitely sailed. But, oh my God, do you really want to tie yourself to this flaming wreckage? Okay, enough of that. That was
well, yeah. Oh my. Well, let's see. All right. I'm looking at my stories here. Okay. I guess since I mentioned this story, I'll mention it. So the decades-old Finger Protocol is abused in ClickFix's malware attacks, and so they're using the.
But people still leave the finger up.
Or let it out even. So the decades-old Finger command is making a comeback.
Is there even a distro anywhere that port is open or that service is on?
Well, it's the command is certainly there. I don't know. I mean, it's like some generic services thing that comes up. But so now in the past, and I remember doing this in the 90s, but people used the Finger command to look up information about local and remote users on Unix and Linux systems via the Finger protocol, a command later added to Windows. While still supported, it's rarely used today compared to its popularity decades ago. Yeah, I had my .plan file was an ASCII image of a middle finger.
Yeah. I mean, Finger almost predates me on the computing.
Yeah, when we were all using local Unix workstations, the Finger command was kind of cool if you wanted to see if somebody was logged in and what they were doing or whatever, because it kind of told you. But so when executed, the Finger command returns basic information about a user, including their login name if it's set in Etsy password, home directory, phone numbers, last seen, and other details. Yeah, when you set up a user account, you still ask for these info. This is like in the Etsy password file, right? So last month, cybersecurity researcher Malware Hunter Team shared a batch file with Bleeping Computer that when executed, would use the Finger root at finger.noteams.com command to retrieve commands from a remote Finger server, which were then run locally by piping them through command.exe. There you go. So it was basically using it to get a command and running it through remote code execution. I mean,
which is a very, very cute way to do something that most sane people would do over HTTP.
Yeah. Or some other way, right?
Yeah. Okay. I guess there's things like, web server gets audited or something, and you're like, we want to hide that. That's it. What it is. It's steganography. You could just open a TCP port and write a socket. Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. I was trying to, I'm trying to see what port it uses, and I need to look in Etsy services. It uses TCP port 79. Now, being in the cybersecurity business, one of the things you want to do is you limit your egress ports, right? You don't want to allow access to anything from anywhere in your internal network. That's just asking for trouble. Most of the time, they limit the outbound ports to specific ones, like 80 and 443, which, and sometimes 53 or whatever.
Sweetheart, what? That's why you run an IMAP.
Any service that I run on my own machine, I usually run on a non-standard port.
Either way, it's that really big fucking thing that I can find out what ports you have open by scanning.
Yes, exactly. But why? Yeah. But
you're going to look at mine and be like, why is port 873 open? That's not a standard port for any service. Why? Because I remap my damn ports if I use the service at all.
Yeah, as you should.
Well, yeah, exactly.
No, nobody should ever, ever, ever open an SSHD on port 22.
Well, yes, and exactly. Or if you do, make sure it's like, I don't know, what do you call it? Not password authentication.
Off.
Yeah, off if you can. Yeah, if you need it. But sometimes it's actually it's useful for remote access. But it's amazing how that can be abused, and because you can do port forwarding through that shit. And of course,
briefly while you were talking, went ahead and ran a command on my local machine, and can confirm that at least in one particular distro of Arch Linux that I'm using, Finger isn't even installed.
So on Mac OS, it actually is, because I just typed it on my the streaming computer here, and it shows me that I'm logged in on the console, and I'm logged in on two virtual terminals, which makes sense. That's on, because anyway, but I guess Mac OS has it. I don't know, but I don't think the ports are open by default. But the point is that, yeah, this is one of the basic things you do in cybersecurity. You limit outbound access. Don't allow it on all ports and protocols, right? Use the ones that you need, right? Because
you limit inbound access, limit outbound access, limit access.
Period.
You want a really secure computer, unplug your damn network.
Yeah, you've seen the cable. It says, you know, cut here for firewall. You know,
exactly.
Yeah, on the Cat 5 cable. Yeah, I've had cables with that on it, printed on it. It's a Dutch, and one of the Dutch companies.
Yeah, and spoiler alert: it's not the network; it's the power cable.
Yeah, that's a better one. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh my goodness. But I just kind of scratch my head at some of this stuff, and I just go like. And
depending on who the user is, you might put that on the keyboard cable too.
Yeah, well, you might take the keyboard away from them and the computer. And anyway, or give them a typewriter, damn it. Anyway, I don't know. Okay, I know there's not much more to say about that story. You said you had another one, honey.
Yeah, I was trying to decide which, because I always bring three, you know, that way I have one in reserve. And I'm pretty much thinking I want to bring this one. And I'll keep the other one just in case we need it. So the question being posed is, why can't ChatGPT tell time? I mean, we all know it's being...
Because people can't.
Well, the thing is this. We all know it's being pitched as a hyper-competent personal assistant. But it can't tell time, and which is really hilarious. Now, we know that the language models work on its own space of language and words, and it's only referencing things that has been entered. So basically, whatever it's been programmed on, you can't theoretically, unless you write code into it, that it can access the time server on your computer so that if you ask it what time it is. I mean, you can do it on your phone. I tested it while I was working on the story. I asked, my bitch in the box here, what time it was. And she gave me an accurate time, but that's completely different from using an LLM.
I can give a stab at why ChatGPT can't tell time, but you've probably got a presentation where you're going to get there. So I'll shut up.
No, I would love to hear what your thoughts are and let you know how, close or far from the marker you are.
Because LLMs don't have code. They don't have algorithms. What they have is pattern matching. And they would be able to tell time if they have some kind of source in the model that has every possible time on a clock linked up to, an image of a clock and linked up to its, this is what time it is. But they don't have that because it's not something that people particularly put into computers. And even when it's in computer, we're not taking screenshots of the clock. We've got an algorithm that, computes the angles from the internal clock. So these things never compute. When they say LLMs don't think, I mean, they literally don't. Anything that requires some kind of thought or computation, LLMs are not good at. What they're good at is pattern matching. They're very good at that. They do it incredibly.
Yeah, I call LLMs autocomplete on steroids because
They are not something that the general internet at large, there is no website out there where people just post images of clocks all day and say this clock says 12:30, this clock says 4:15. There isn't one.
No, but the simple solution on this is that if you embed it in the context of the app and then enable the search function on the app, and give it permission to tap into the computer's built-in time tools in addition to the web, you can get the accurate time. But there's a lot... Yeah, I know, I heard that groan, and I don't disagree. It's not just a one-size-fits-all solution to this. I mean, it's...
The solution is not using damn LLM for this.
Precisely.
Use the right tool for the right job.
Computers have had the ability to compute angles and draw a short and a long line segment for as long as computers have had graphical outputs, and running an LLM on this is saying we're going to use the amount of power required by a factory to do something that a calculator watch should be able to do.
Or
a literal watch.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be a calculator.
Yeah, exactly. What this, the whole reason, other than to trigger Rye, because it's fun, to bring this story was simply because what the hell ever happened to looking on your wrist or looking at an actual timepiece? There's a reason I purchased a clock for my office, because it seemed like every time I wanted to know what time it was, I don't want to have to look at my computer screen, because sometimes it's not clearly noted where it is because of something I'm doing. So I look at a fucking clock.
Does anybody really know what time it is?
On the wall. I have a straight up analog clock on the wall above the monitor I'm looking at.
The best kind.
Yeah. I actually did quite a while ago, early in Angry Tech News, I got pissed off at Daylight Saving Shift, and I did a whole segment, which is still, I think, one of the best podcasting things I've ever done, on four completely different ways to get time into your house. And short version, I had four clocks nearby. I had my computer, which adjusted itself for daylight saving by NTP protocol. I have a little weather station, which adjusted via the low frequency radio wave time thing from, you know, rebroadcast from the atomic clock in Colorado. I don't know if you know about this, but if you ever, like, back in the early 90s, they had, everyone wanted a, you know, this is an atomic clock, which wasn't true. What it got, it was a radio signal that was set by an atomic clock somewhere. And that radio, and it, they said, you know, it'll always set its own time. Anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't always work, but.
Yeah, but it's a cool technology, and it was definitely, you know, before NTP, it was a means of getting automatic time synchronization into your house.
I don't want a clock with internet access, goddammit.
And then I had a third one nearby, which was a cell phone, which got its time from the local cell tower. So that's three different ways that I had clocks in my office that auto-updated. And then I was saying, and I have a fourth clock that updates because I get up and take it off the wall and manually change it. And then I discussed on in that, you know, and here's why it's beneficial to have one that doesn't change automatically, because if somebody wants to do some kind of a gaslighting attack against you, they've got these three other vectors that they can use to change what time you think it is. But, you know, having three different methods means that it's, you know, more difficult for people to change the time without my knowing, and having one that never changes on its own is my final hedge against being gaslit by somebody changing my time zone.
Yeah. Or by the way, I mean, okay. So because I'm thinking about this from a cybersecurity perspective. So NTP, which runs on port one, UDP 119, as I recall, and I don't think it's encrypted or anything like that. So, you know,
I'm not
going to
fact check you on that number.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you can fact check me on that number. That's totally cool. Yeah. Grep Etsy services, if you, you know, to confirm it, but it's UDP. And the way, now, if you try to inject a time that's like way off of base, right, it's the NTP protocol will reject it. Right. And sometimes it's when your clock's way off, right, you might need to do a one time, tell me what the current time is. So this is where you use the NTP date command or something like that, which will just query the NTP server for the current time, and it'll set the clock to the clock to that time. But that's a manual step. But the NTP protocol itself, right, it works on this thing called skew, right? So you could technically take the time and skew it one direction or another over the course of time, because guess, you know, I'm sure the system checks its NTP every so often, right? And therefore, will, you know, you see the NTP packets coming out. If you have a privileged position in the network, or, you know, whatever, you could probably take those packets and rewrite them to do things and fuck with people's sense of time on a computer. So I like the idea, and I you know, as much technology as there is here in the studio, I'm a huge fan of things that aren't connected to the internet. So yeah. For the reason you specified, right? I don't want, you know, yeah, I know the clock is going to drift and all of that, and that's fine. But I can, you know, like the clock in my car, right? It's a, so I, it, it has, I set it, It has buttons that I push the hour, the minute, and the, you know, reset the second counter on it or whatever. That's all it does. You know, and it's not connected to anything. And when I have to do the daylight saving dance, I got to, you know, push the buttons or whatever. But I have it set a few minutes fast on purpose just to make sure I'm not late.
The clock in my car is precisely 58 minutes ahead right now.
Because
the reason is
I'm not going to touch it. Standard time.
I'm not going to touch it, and starting in March, it will be 2 minutes behind.
Yeah, there you go. That's right. As long as you know that, right? As long as you know what the time is. It's much like my clock is like 7 minutes fast or something, and it does drift, I've noticed over the years. And so I've actually had to go, I'm like, okay, 10 minutes fast is a little bit too much. I should probably set it back a little bit closer to where it should be. So, but it's, anyway. But yes, I like not having things connected to the internet or, you know, whatever, for that reason, because somebody can come fuck with you.
And you said in the chat, you said you got a window, open it. I shit you not. I taught myself many, 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 many years ago, the ability to look at where the sun is in the sky. And I can generally tell within about 20 minutes what time it is just from that. It's not that difficult if you train yourself. And believe it or not, before we had all this electronics and before we had clocks on every surface of everything in the house, that's kind of how people told time, and they were pretty good at it.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And now at different times of the year, right? Like
Now, admittedly, in the Pacific Northwest, sometimes there is no sun.
Well, no, but there is a small amount of daylight. But also from what I remember, that the number of daylight hours, that, for example, you know, like in December, right, you might get 8 hours of daylight, you know, a day, right? Whereas let's say
the sun sets about 4:40 p.m.
Yeah, exactly. So like in June, you get like 16 plus, right? So it's not entirely the sun. It's also the time of year and whatever. But you know, because I think in fact I think we were kind of talking about that driving around. It's like the sun goes down at, you know, 5 or 6 o'clock or something, depending on what side of the time zone you are here. It's just like, okay, but again, time, you figure out the time of year, you can kind of go, oh, okay, yeah, you can kind of figure out what time it is, or at least, yeah, whether you should be outside or not, you know, or whether, you know, yeah, anyway, it's just, it, but yeah, there's lots of manual ways to do it. And yes, there's a lot of manual clocks in this place too. So, as Chris, I'm sitting here staring at the fact that the Roadcaster has a clock, the computer.
Did we cut Phoenix short on her with this unfocused digression?
No, I was just going to mention that, yes, it's possible to, you know, give permissions and do this and that, but it also comes with a downside, of course, because, you know, allowing them to just search the web and access your personal data, you know, you can end up with the bot being injected with malicious prompts that are scattered across the internet. And at the end of the day, you know, just get a fucking clock and look at it, an analog if you can. And calendars are also an issue for GPTs, apparently, which makes me laugh.
Well, try to have them do basic math. ChatGPT to do 52 factorial and read the number out, which is a large number of digits.
Ask your ChatGPT how many strawberries there are in the letter R.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I don't know. And my advice for every, you know, all the Zoomers out there who are under 15 or under 20 and still, you know, just learning how to use ChatGPT to tell time, here is my advice from this old Gen Xer who, you know, is on the verge of being a boomer as we go. Learn to clock.
Yeah.
And buy a paper calendar.
Yeah.
They're cheap.
That's also, yeah. Although, you know, sometimes you're like, don't care what day it is.
Does anybody really know what time it is? Does anybody really care? Anyway.
And also, when you are changing that configuration, make sure that you don't accidentally break your DNS or build your config file too big, or you could take out a third of the internet.
Well, yeah, if you're in that privileged position of being able to take out a third of the internet, if I fuck up a config file, I'm the one who's fucked. Maybe Phoenix, depending upon what it is, but yeah. It's not. I don't have anything.
She might like that.
Well, that's a different show, and that's called the after.
Yeah, that's after the show when we sign off entirely, and then you go fuck up her config file.
Jesus,
there is a new innuendo, isn't it?
Yeah, fuck up her. Yeah, well, I'll fuck up your config file.
That's the best thing. All right, guys, we got to go. Phone boy's going to go fuck up my config file.
Jesus Christ. Oh, my God.
It's not called the after party anymore. It's called tech maintenance.
Percussive maintenance. Oh, no, we already used that one.
Yeah, we have. Actually, I don't think it actually has made a show title. So percussive maintenance. But we've done percussive maintenance. So.
Who wants to talk about forced updates?
I do.
This one is there was an airline somewhere in Europe somewhere that an Airbus A320 had to make an emergency landing after the onboard avionics suddenly dropped by 10,000 feet of altitude.
It was a JetBlue flight.
Okay, I didn't remember who it was, but they injured up to 15 people. That was the 30th of October. As of yesterday, Airbus officially came out with the report on what happened. Now, if you are aware of how the A320s series works, they rely on an ELAC computer, which is effectively the term, which sounds very sterile and not nearly as frightening as it is fly-by-wire, which means that you do not have, like, you know, I don't think it's true of the newer Boeings, but the older Boeings all basically had physical mechanical bits from the controls in the cockpit all the way to the ailerons and elevators. Well, Airbus hasn't had that for quite a while. What you are holding is a computer joystick that sends electronic signals into a computer that then decides whether or not it's going to transfer your commands to the air control surfaces. Well, this particular computer, what they determined was that, quote, intense radiation from the sun could corrupt data crucial to the flight controls. So basically they were flying through a place called Florida, where occasionally there's sun. And the computer somehow caught a burst of radiation, which does, in fact, happen when the sun is shining on you.
And then we've also had solar flares lately, too, by the way.
Yeah, that scrambled the bits in the avionic computer just the right way to make it suddenly decide that the computer was not going to pay any attention to what those silly little humans in the cockpit wanted and instead was going to just do its own thing with the flight controls. Now, I don't know about anybody else. This scares the holy shit out of me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, that and the TSA. But
Airbus has officially put out a notice that they have a software patch. As a result of this, they are effectively, you know, in so much as they can. I think this is alongside with various governmental safety agencies, whatever. Have effectively grounded 6,000 airplanes starting yesterday.
Ooh, lovely.
Which, by the way, you know, one good thing about this, Airbus primarily operates in Europe, yesterday, I don't know if you knew this, but in America was a holiday.
Sherlock.
The biggest flight weekend in the entire year. Happened yesterday.
Yeah, although it's interesting, they said traffic was down about 5% despite having capacity to handle it. Although I'm guessing that 340 Airbus, because I can assure you that every major airline in the United, except for Southwest, right, which is standardized on the Boeing 737 for pretty much everything. Pretty much every airline runs some sort of, you know, for some of their flights runs, you know, an Airbus.
I happen to know Seattle is a hub for Alaska Airlines.
They're also a hub for Delta, by the way.
Oh, are they? Well, I know they're a hub for Alaska Airlines, which is entirely Boeing, which is not surprising considering Seattle, Boeing, hello. But
although they certainly don't act like it anymore because then they moved their corporate headquarters.
The U.S. airlines that are strongly affected by this because they have, what the article said was a significant number of their planes being Airbus A320 series were American and Delta.
Yep. I saw some article about Delta, or I mean, it was American actually. They had the ground, you know, 300 some number.
That's
of planes.
The same exact story he's talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, short version, you know, the grounding will not take that long, and could just be a delay for probably 3/4 of the planes, which do support effectively hot patching the computers. That also does not make me feel good that there's a Windows update service on these planes, because, you know, how long until some hacker figures this one out? But they can ground the plane, and they say it takes a couple hours to remote patch and upload the software. I really hope there's a physical port you have to plug into. However, somewhere between 900 and 1500 of these planes are older planes, which will require upgrades to their computer hardware, and they are grounded until they basically get new computers installed.
Okay. Can I just make a comical thought? When he was talking about, I hope there's a physical port you have to connect to, I'm thinking about this big ass fucking Ethernet cable slung over some poor fucking schlep shoulder that he's dragging out to the fucking plane cone and fucking plugging in the nose.
No. Honey, that's called a thick Ethernet cable.
That's what I'm saying.
They used to have those back in the day, and you know, and yeah.
I mean, if I wanted to be serious, I imagine that this sort of thing is kept on a USB stick or something. But
it probably is.
Like your visual.
It probably is, but I had to add that visual for comical relief.
And like I said, how long until we get some kind of Hollywood movie where a plot thing is somebody plugs a USB stick into the airplane and suddenly the controls in the cockpit don't do anything and he's controlling it from his Nintendo Switch in row 16.
Come on, row 33, dude. Come on.
Sure.
It has to be row 33.
This is your new homegrown terrorism, baby.
Jeez.
Put a gun to the pilot's head. Put this USB stick in, or I swear to God, I'm taking this airliner down.
I was a little frightened when I heard that there are airplanes where there is a computer that decides whether or not the people in the cockpit are actually connected to all of the airframe and control surfaces. But then when I found out that they have the ability to hot patch the software, I'm like, I may never fly again.
Yeah, really. Driving sounds really good.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I don't know if you've heard about the state of air traffic control lately. This, but certainly it was an issue during the shutdown when they had to.
Because who the fuck knew that ATC was paid through the government?
Yeah, well.
Who the fuck knew that there was a shutdown going on?
Who the fuck cared if you weren't on?
Well, that's what I mean. If you know, let's see. I still had money yanked out of my paycheck against my will, and. And all of the government services that I use were still going. A dude in a white Jeep showed up to my mailbox every day. I didn't see any evidence of this. There was just a whole lot of theater on TV channels I don't watch.
Yes, and of course, yeah. You read some of the articles about some of this stuff, and you just kind of roll your eyes and go, why is it the government's responsibility to do these things? Anyway.
Yeah, that's a big no kidding.
Okay, so I want to steer us back to this airline story for just a moment, because, again, we don't believe in coincidences, but I think it's awful interesting that all of the package-carrying planes after the Louisville UPS crash were grounded because, oh, look at this huge flaw that we found, and now we've got all these passenger travel airliners being grounded because, oh, look at this software fuck-up we have and all this outdated hardware. Again, I really don't think there's any...
Coincidence? I think not.
Come on. The article here, and actually the Airbus press release, did reiterate, in case you haven't heard this little nugget over and over again, that air travel is still the safest way to get from point A to point B. I mean, they hardly ever eject doors from the airplane in midair these days.
No, that would be bad things. So considering it would suck. Pretty much,
I mean, it only happened once in recent memory.
Oh no! Well, there was some incident that actually, I think, if I remember, it might have been. I think it was actually in Hawaii or something. That there was an incident where either a window or something, you know, like exploded or something, and yeah,
So there have been in the last 4 years, there have been a number of very high profile airline safety incidents, which in almost every case have been attributed to poor maintenance and therefore can be put on the airline. There was actually quite a few from United. There was one from Alaska when a Boeing 737 door plug blew out at like 25,000 feet.
That's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah. And in general, the airline manufacturers were not to blame because they, you know, NTSB pointed to poor maintenance as the problem, which doesn't make me feel safer flying because, okay, so if I die in a horrible plane crash, the question of whether it's Boeing's fault or United's fault doesn't really make me feel better.
Completely irrelevant when you're dead.
I'll be mellow when I'm dead. Oh, wait a minute. That's
I was going to say, I guess it would help your family to know who to sue.
Yeah, that doesn't really make me feel better. Or anything, if I'm dead.
No, you would feel nothing. You would be dead.
Yeah.
I'll be mellow when I'm dead. Okay, so...
What do you got, phone boy?
Wait, I have two more stories. So this is... Okay, I think I'll go first with Americans are holding on to their devices longer than ever, and it's costing the economy. Well,
no, it's not.
No, but it depends on how
that's
you're
a broken
looking.
Window fallacy right there.
Exactly. While squeezing as much life out of your device as possible may save money in the short run, especially amid widespread fears about the strength of the consumer and job market, it might cost the economy in the long run. Well,
not costing the economy. It's costing whatever Silicon Valley company this fucking shill is writing for.
And let's not even get into the fact that most of that e-waste, because you want the newest, most bestest, is not ending up in recycling, but in landfills.
Sorry,
that was just me clearing my throat.
No, but I'm with you on this because
bullshit.
Yeah, bullshit. Now
I got you guys on this.
This is bullshit.
Yeah, JCD. There you go. I have to read this because I saw this and I started giggling and Phoenix was because we were sitting on the bed before the show. I was copy pasting my notes or whatever. But
giggling, fucking up her config file.
Exactly. So research released by the Federal Reserve, we know what corrupt organization that is, concludes that each additional year companies delay upgrading equipment results in a productivity decline of about 0.3%. Oh my God.
Wow. 0.33.
Not
how
measurable.
Will we ever survive?
With investment patterns accounting for approximately 55% of productivity gaps between advanced economies. Well, now experts, and we know what experts are, they agree that lost productivity and inefficiency are the unintended consequences of people and business clinging to aging technology. The problem is with aging technology, yes, there's a couple of problems. Now, especially with things like cell phones, right? Yeah. Because, of course, they're always upgrading to 3G and 4G and 5G and ultra-wide broadband and whatever else. It's like they're continually investing. First of all, like, you know, I remember the days when you had 9600 baud or 2400 baud or 300 baud or whatever. We didn't have this wide patent. Now we're getting multi-gigabit on our phones or whatever. What are we doing with it? You know, why do we need this much connectivity?
Watching TikTok.
Yeah, watching TikTok.
Okay,
we're brainwashing ourselves.
I have to add this because I literally was watching Daz and Kickstarters, and they literally had a pair of, I don't remember how long ago this was, literally a pair of underwear that blocks the Wi-Fi or some shit that's causing nut cancer, because who the fuck texts with their phone on their lap or their, I mean, yes, okay, you sit with your laptop on your lap, ergo why they call it a laptop, but apparently the Wi-Fi and all these signals is causing your swimmers to get retarded and slow. And there's this underwear that it's almost like an RFID blocker, but for like Wi-Fi signals.
Stop keeping your phone in your pants.
That was one of the other things. Yes.
Yes, but all of the, but it's like, okay, do we need, you know, because I'm kind of sitting here and I'm going, the only reason I couldn't, if I still had my Nokia N95, which I don't anymore, I left it in Wisteria.
You have fapped so hard over the Nokia N95, I swear.
Now I understand why phones have gotten so big lately.
Yeah.
When you insert the, I'll shut up.
Yeah. Phone boy so glazed that one over, you realize.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. No, but phones have all become these slabs. I mean, there's a reason we call them fondle slabs, right? I mean, because they're basically, they all.
Apparently another reason too.
Yeah. At least Nokia back in the, you got a
ribbed for her pleasure.
Jesus.
I was going to say,
the other damn show.
Can you bring this above the belt line for just 10 seconds? Fair enough.
No, as I say, that's the other show. We're supposed to be, we're not supposed to do that in this show.
The phone is an automated device for fucking up your config file.
Yes, exactly.
See, that's why y'all are keeping your phones in your front pockets. You have your phone set on vibrate, and then you just keep texting yourself.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, y'all ain't right.
But we ain't wrong.
Yeah, but yeah, it's basically, you're not buying enough phones. You're fucking up the economy. Buy more and be happy.
Also known as over-consumerism.
Oh my God. God forbid people be productive. You know, what is the productivity hit of using a device, equipment, whatever, that fucking works and isn't taking a fucking update every 5 minutes? That doesn't have Silicon Valley introducing new bugs and changing features, so you have to relearn how to use it. And this isn't just phones, but the article said something about, you know, changing your equipment. Like, oh, we're 0.3% more productive when we have new equipment. Okay, first of all, you can't fucking measure that. You can't. You can barely measure productivity at all. There are so many factors that go in. I want to know what asshole decided to try to put together a study and what the methodology was that they were able to measure 0.3% of productivity. But I don't have to read the study because I'll tell you where it came from. This asshole pulled it out of their ass.
Assholes but pulling it out of their ass.
They're not.
Show title.
They're not even accounting for the. I mean, this is such a shill for a company that wants to sell you new equipment, because trust me, you are more you lose productivity every single time somebody moves your goddamn cheese. I don't even know if anybody gets that reference.
I know the reference. It's I forget exactly where it comes from, but it sounds familiar from back in the day. So
It was one of those power productivity books for executives back in the day.
The
idea is that humans train themselves to get into a routine, and every single time you do anything, no matter how minuscule or silly, every time you change something, you harm productivity. Period. That is how the human brain works. We get into routine and we become most productive when we are able to follow the routine and use our muscle memory to do the things we've done 100 times before. And if you are upgrading and taking software patches and switching out gear every fucking month, people never have time to develop muscle memory. Everybody is constantly freaking out about how do I even... You very successfully brought a story that triggered Sir Primrose on this one.
You're welcome. It. By the way,
upgrade.
You know, we have to bring in a little Idiocracy
with two D's.
Yeah, with two D's for a double dose of pimpin' pleasure or some shit like that. God,
you realize my youngest has never seen that movie. We need to make this happen.
That sounds like something you need. You need to take a night and fuck up his config files.
Well, we decided that. We're gonna do the Big Lebowski, and of course on Hans Gruber Day. Watch Hans Gruber, but I think we need to add Idiocracy because Phone Boy and I were joking yesterday about something, and we were both like, we were talking about the different branding between Best Foods and Hellman's and then Carl's Jr. and Hardee's. Yeah. We were like, Carl's Jr., fuck you, I'm eating.
That's right.
And he's just like looking, he's like, and we're like, it's Idiocracy, you wouldn't understand.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
The difference in branding between Hellman's and Bucky's.
Well, Jesus Christ. Don't get us started on Buc-ee's.
No.
I'm trying.
No, but no, it's, but okay. So as somebody who grew up on the left coast, I know that Carl's Jr. star anywhere. Now I've been to Hardee's before. I've been to the South before Hardee's and Carl's Jr. merged or whatever the fuck they did. I still see that thing and I see Hardee's. I'm going, that's fucking Carl's Jr.
And we have
and you're
one.
Not wrong.
We have one on the road we live on at the other end next to the highway. So he gets to see it every time he has to go into town.
Yeah. And you're right. It is.
Yeah. Fuck you. I'm eating. Yes. But exactly. It's just it's the same shit food. You know, although I remember in California, you could also get Mexican. They had like tacos and shit. They had the green burrito with the one.
And that is exactly the correct
red burrito
description.
They had
tacos and shit.
Yeah. It's all shit food, but.
Okay, here's the thing, though. You really can't call Red Burrito Mexican food. That's like calling Taco Bell Mexican food.
I'm going to pull off the road for tacos and shit.
Is it Red Burrito here?
It's Red Burrito here.
Yeah, Green Burrito is what I remember on remember back in...
Okay, so it's probably Green Burrito Carl's Jr. out on the west and Red Burrito Hardee's.
Yeah,
here closer to the east, but you can't call that Mexican food anymore.
I'm going to bring a partial AI story, trying to get back on track.
Yeah, let's.
Actually, no, it's a data breach story. Oh, wait, it's both. OpenAI discloses a data breach.
Motherfucker! I almost pulled this story. Right, swear to God, I read it and went, "No, fuck that! I'm not bringing that."
It's also not much of a story. I just wanted, you know, what I just said right there was like that was the entire reason I did it. The OpenAI again press release. They said, this was not a breach of OpenAI's systems. No chat API request user were compromised or exposed. Our systems are good. Don't distrust us. They blamed it on a third-party provider called Mixpanel, which is an analytics provider that they contracted without any opt-out or consulting of any of the users. So I don't know why it's nothing more than academic semantics that it's not an OpenAI system. Because you weren't really given the choice whether or not your stuff was sent to them. But it was technically a third party.
And they tried to soothe by like, oh, no, it was just like some usernames and passwords. No, no real, PPI.
It was your username, your user account, your email, your geolocation, your OS browser and browser fingerprint, whatever page you used to get there,
your organization user ID.
Yeah, your organization user ID, which it's basically the name you use to log into your computer, which if your name is user and you're logging into a computer on your desktop, then that's probably not very interesting.
But if you're connected to an username
active domain.
Are you talking about the username you'd use to log into like Linux or something?
I'm talking about the user ID that you would use to log into Active Directory.
Same idea, yeah. It's the username or the username
that you use to log into your corporation.
Okay, but hold on. How is that not a big fucking problem?
Well, everybody knows your username because it's kind of like how you're identified in the system, right? So
follow my thought on this, phone boy, because you're 30 years in this industry and I'm just learning about it. But if you have a corporate login information on someone, lateral movement is the next logical step.
Well, if you can log in, yeah. I mean, and they have access to anything useful. I mean,
are you shitting me? Do I need to go back through the 2025 most popular passwords, of which 12345 is still on the top 10 list?
And you know, because you've actually gone through it. I remember because you did this in one of the previous classes, setting a password policy in Active Directory.
Yep.
And my guess, how many people actually do that? Or if in a small environment, right? Is anybody actually going into to the configuration and setting the password policy? I guarantee you, nobody's fucking doing that shit.
And also, you're right that's not a hugely sensitive piece of data because you need, in order to compromise an account in Active Directory, you need the user ID, which I guess is totally public or at least available from all these breaches. And then you also need to be able to authenticate to Active Directory, which only happens if you have the two-factor authentication or the password, or you wait around for Active Directory to have yet another vulnerability, which only happens about once every 3 weeks.
All right, so I need to... That fucking triggered me slightly, and I'll tell you why. When I started school, to get into my school thing, all I had to do was have my username, password, everything is fine. Oh no, now it's such a big security risk. Now, when I log in, not only do I have to put my username and my password, but then I get to get a number that's sent to my Outlook email that I have to enter to make sure it's me trying to log in.
Oh yeah, that's one of the TFA schemes. That's exactly the same as the Authenticator app, except that you've decided to put the internet in the way.
Well, yes.
There's not anything I can do about it.
Imagine your Authenticator app, except that it traverses the internet. Oh, yeah, in plain text.
Well, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, Apple does it with their services. They do it through their push notification service, which theoretically it's HTTPS, but it means Apple knows everything, of course.
This is why truly I like using Apple for payment.
And it's funny how Apple is never on Apple's threat model.
Well, of course. I mean, I don't know what Apple's threat model is. No, not, anyway, there's probably lots of threats to Apple's business model if we get right down to it. Oh, my goodness.
I hope that didn't break your mic.
Absolutely.
Sorry. I blame the peanut butter stout.
Some kind of demon is trying to crack into your house right there.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Get the shotgun.
Need an exorcism. There's a demon in me.
All right. So... And it's not
so
me.
Yeah, they were quick to say that your chats prompts, your responses, your API keys and auth tokens were not affected, and also this did not affect ChatGPT. So they didn't affect ChatGPT means that if you happen to use OpenAI, you're probably okay, unless you use their API for something else, in which case you probably ought to check and also reevaluate your life choices that led you to using OpenAI, but that's me. The last thing I had from this story was the Q&A in their press release where they say, quote, should I enable multi-factor authentication for my account? Yeah, that was just a random question on the Q&A, which has nothing to do with this particular breach. The answer, would you like to guess what the answer they gave for that obvious leading question?
Probably yes, of some sort.
The letters YES is how they abbreviated fucking duh.
Yeah, no shit, Sherlock.
If you're using it for anything remotely important or sensitive, by the way, I do admit that I have, from a couple years ago, have a ChatGPT account, which has an email and a username attached to it, and it does not have multi-factor authentication, because if somebody hacks it, they're really just going to get my screwing around and some literotica prompts. So hackers, go for it. Have fun.
Yeah, exactly.
I actually saw a story. I didn't bring it, but I saw it where the shit you're searching on ChatGPT can actually get you arrested. Isn't that some
shit? Yeah, I'm not surprised.
I'm not either, but if you think about it, okay? Let's say that I decided to use this disgusting fucking LLM to do some study material on something, and let's say that, oh, I don't know, for instance, I'm studying criminal justice, and I type in some fucking shit that a normal person typing in possibly could lead to something nefarious, but I'm doing it for research purposes. The next fucking thing I know, I could have SWAT at my door busting the fucking thing down like I'm criminal, you know.
You don't even have to qualify. You don't even have to qualify what it is that you're typing in there. All you have to do, for example, and I know that you don't personally do this, but you could live in the UK. And then all you could do is say hello to the LLM and get arrested for it.
Pretty much.
All you don't need, you know, there's a line between acceptable speech and unacceptable speech. And where that line is determined by how authoritarian your government is, which isn't really in your control. So... the very idea that people send their innermost thoughts to these autocompletes, you know, that is scary enough, psychologically speaking, but the very fact that it goes over the internet and it's stored forever and never deleted should give a pause to anybody who's like, you know, I wonder if anything I've ever done in my life could come back and bite me later because it's all recorded.
That's something that probably should have been thought about way before ChatGPT ever became a thing.
Yeah, those of us who were on the internet,
which is why I'm not on almost every service.
Yeah,
exactly. This is the don't digitize your dick model.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, this is what I've often said is the don't digitize your dick thing. But yeah, maybe you shouldn't type your deepest, darkest personal secrets on some fucking internet service. I don't know.
Wait, you guys are literally setting me up for this story that I didn't know if I wanted to bring, but damn it, now I'm just going to have to bring it because, of course, as no surprise, experts are now warning of ChatGPT psychosis among users of these chatbots. Now, you know we've
experts. Experts didn't give a shit until experts got paid to warn.
Exactly. So, of course, you know, we've talked a lot about this between this show and Lotus Effect. And, of course, reports have begun to emerge of individuals with no prior history of psychosis experiencing first episodes following intense interaction with generative AI agents. In an article in Psychology Today published this week, psychiatrist and author Dr. Marilyn Wei warned that because general AI chatbots are designed to prioritize user satisfaction and ongoing engagement rather than therapeutic support, symptoms like grandiosity, disorganized thinking, and hypergraphia, or a compulsion to write and or draw excessively, which are all hallmarks of manic episodes, could be both facilitated and worsened by AI use. Well, duh.
Where did you find this story, if I may ask?
Let me go back into my notes.
While you're doing that, the reason I ask, I got was from Spectrum.
It came out of The Independent.
Okay. The reason I ask is because the root cause that you just described, where the LLMs have been told that you need to make users happy above everything else, is also the same root cause with a reserve story that I had that I wasn't thinking of bringing, that it basically says that agentic AI is willing to break its directives if the user urges them enough, because the directive to get, you know, satisfy the user comes ahead of the directive to, you know, not be racist or whatever else they, you know, they've got the 250 prime directives in these things.
Oh, completely. You know, she went on to talk about the urgent need for AI pseudo-education. No, there's just a need for AI fucking don't use it as a therapy tool. Duh.
Yeah, learning that is called education.
Yeah, the innate shortcomings of AI should remind us that computers are still unable to replace real interactions with our fellow humans. Instead of trying to perfect the technology, maybe we should turn back toward the social
world. Communicate with humans?
Oh. Yeah, actually interact with other fucking people.
The thing is, Silicon Valley cannot collect rent on every interaction you have with another human, so obviously they're not going to push for that.
No, and they're also not paying the fucking funeral bills for everybody who's doing shit like jumping out windows because an AI told them to.
No, of course. You internalize your benefits and you externalize your costs.
No shit, Sherlock. I mean, that's what we've learned in this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable the number of people. I mean, this is why I love doing this show, but part of me hates the fact that I feel like every single story on any platform that I'm finding, except for a select few, is ChatGPT, this, and AI that, and like, what the fuck? Why can't we talk about normal computing? I don't want to talk about quantum computing, because like you said, it's been 2 to 5 fucking years away for 2 to 5 fucking years times 10. Or to the 10th power. I don't give a fuck how you put it. Point is, it's been there. They've been fapping about it, and it's getting nowhere. What was that noise?
I don't know what it was, but
that was the demon going and finding a weapon.
I think the demon came. The demon came out.
The demon came out
and hid in the closet.
I don't know, but
he's getting ready to fuck up your config file.
The air is getting slippery here.
That's right.
That's a Primus song. I'll have to play that later.
My daemon's about to fuck up my config file.
Yeah. Oh, are you done with your story? Are you?
Yes, I'm done, because it was just a quick in and out about the fact we've been talking about for, you know, so long, that this is just not a safe way. You should interact with human beings, even if we're doing something like this, like on CleanFeed. I'm not an AI, even though I've been considered a bot. I mean, seriously, we are human beings. We bleed blood. We have.
Cloudflare thinks
hugs.
I'm a bot all the time, but
yes,
truck.
exactly. Truck. Okay. So I have one more story. I think this will take the cake. Fake Windows update screen fuels new wave of click fix attacks. Now the trouble with humans.
Ignored this story.
As I say, from the trouble with humans department comes a click. A convincing but fake Windows update screen can be the perfect lure for tricking users into infecting their computers with malware. Now, the multi-stage delivery chain with some offbeat techniques and info stealer operators have everything they need to slip past defenses. Now, since the beginning of October, Huntress has identified multiple click-fix lure sites that trick victims into running a malicious command, following a consistent format and leading to a unique execution chain across multiple incidents, according to Huntress researchers Ben Follin and Anna Pham. Initially, the lure page would show the typical human verification window, asking users to press Win R to open the Windows Run box, the Control V to paste a command that was automatically copied to the keyboard, and finally Enter to run the command. Oh God! Maybe I don't know. I'm gonna have to pull up this story. I need to post the link to it. But if you actually pull the link up to this, I'll actually copy the image and paste it to the chat here. Yeah, if somebody ever asks you to type something into your command line, run. You know, I mean,
yeah, wasn't this the one where
you're not wrong,
copy paste text that wasn't yours into your browser or something?
I wish I'd seen this story like for the last show 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
And then brought it then.
Well, it didn't come until
but,
like.
But I was going from a different angle on that one because I was.
Yeah, well, this story came out on the 25th, by the way.
That was the click fix and, putting up things that you're supposed to paste into a command prompt was. The angle that I took on it was that the news article missed the point and you went more into the thing the article was talking about, which was, yes, you really shouldn't be copy and pasting bullshit and putting it into you're basically bypassing every single security feature ever put in between you and the internet.
Well, yes, there's a reason that we don't expose the command line to most users. You have to know what you're doing to use the command line, right? That's the way God damn it, we learned how to do anything. We had a fucking command line and we liked it.
Yeah, but remember, yeah. What you guys
I started
often
on MS DOS.
End users are stupid. Period. Dot.
Yeah.
Go away, Baton.
I appreciate that I started on MS DOS, which was all command line, because the stupid ones couldn't use computers at all. It was glorious.
Well,
and then came the September that never ended.
Yes, exactly. The internet, which, you know, we know what the internet is. It's for porn. And we even have it on vinyl. But anyway, that's a different discussion.
That's a different show.
That's right.
You have the whole internet on vinyl? Is that what it is?
No, I have Avenue Q on vinyl because somebody bought it, not me, but so we have the Avenue Q original soundtrack on vinyl.
We will eventually listen to it.
But yes, I have The Internet Is for Porn on vinyl. That's essential. That's essential. That's right. Oh my God. So,
but have you noticed now, I want to point out, because, you know, last week with the story that Sir Vemros reposted out of his notes and the one that you just brought, it almost feels like this shit is just building on each other. It's the same thing, just from the way he put it, different angles.
Yeah. I mean,
exactly.
I
mean, stuff happens and then you get a whole bunch of people having their opinion on it. And then we come and laugh at one person's opinion. And the next week we laugh at a different person because nobody really got it right. Except us, of course.
Phone boy, can you click on what's playing on your screen right now? Oh, fuck, that's a video.
Yeah, let's not do that, because this was the...
No, I understand that, but it caught my attention because it's literally...
It's actually one of the stories we covered, yeah, because... Yeah,
about when, how when I, AI refuses to shut itself down.
As long as you're clicking on things, if I type some text in here, can you go ahead and paste it into a command line?
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
What I was doing was I was pulling up the script, because one of the things we do, of course, is all the shit we talk about is in our show notes. If you go to 2.5bens.com, right, for each show, right, yeah, we've got all the bullshit we talk about, all the stories we talk about, they're there, right? I was actually, because she pasted an Apple News link, and so I had to go sort of to turn it into something.
Well, that's how I always do it.
Well, that's fine.
You had to click on it while you were on microphone, because That's how we roll.
Exactly.
Distracted.
Yep. Yeah, because we're trying to do production live on the fly. That's what we're doing, right? And as the person who has to post this shit and make the show notes, yeah, I like to make sure all my links actually work. I don't know.
Well, considering last week you forgot to post it for like a day or two.
God forbid you find out whether
the links work after you've recorded.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
It wouldn't be fun multitasking. If you did.
Yeah. Okay. On too much caffeine.
I have
he switched from caffeine to high ABVs.
Yes, I have a 11% dragon's milk bourbon barrel aged stout sitting here.
Okay, that's quality.
It. Yeah,
I've got a pint of cider in there that I've been saving for a special occasion.
Yeah.
Oh, very nice.
I literally heard you say though. Oh, he switched from caffeine to hate.
Well, you know what?
Like that's one way to podcast.
I can't say that when you think about how bad that is for your body that it's not switching from caffeine to hate. I don't know what the ABV is on the...
What is the ABV of hate?
The ABV of
about
hate.
About 9.0.
Yeah, at least. Well, yeah, this is an 11%. So I'm at 11%. Yeah, I'm...
Well, I've run out of stories I prepared.
So have I. So I think you've...
I think it's about time to wind it up.
Yeah, how the hell did we get to 2 hours? We almost said like at $1.40.
Yeah, we said we were going to have a short show. What the hell?
Have you ever listened to this shit show?
Yeah. All right. Well, for those
we fuck up config files left and right.
That's what we do.
I probably need to write it. Anyway, you can go to 2.5bens.com to listen to this and you know, later.
Or go to lotuseffect.live after he posts it.
Yeah, well, there's also 2.5bens.live.
Well, look at you, Hootacoo.
Yeah, there's a reason I have 2.5bens.live, Studio 33. Anyway, I've got all those different. They all point to the same fucking
because
place.
Because you got a good deal on .live domains.
You're not wrong.
Like 20 for three.
Well, no.
You got a package
buy
deal.
One, get six free.
Yeah, something along those lines. Yeah, wait.
Smearing our brand feces all over every .live tech there is.
That's right. All right, man. I think we're going to end this, and it goes something like this.
Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now? What are we going to do?